One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Patreon a day early or on the main feed, if you are so inclined. We obviously weren't here on Tuesday because I was on tour, but we are back. My name is Kenny. I'm joined as always by Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you? It feels like ages since we've spoken.
It is ages, Kenny. It is ages. That's why it feels like ages, because it is. No, I'm feeling better now. I've tested positive for COVID on Monday. So I was feeling really rough Monday, absolutely awful Tuesday, but I feel like I'm making a bit of a comeback now, So, but still not, 100%, but making a comeback. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I kind of left for the tour on, well, I came back from the Sergeant Slaughter tour on Friday night. And then on Saturday night, I felt I had kind of a bit of a cold coming on. I kind of had that throughout the tour. It was okay, but it's going to hit me a bit more than I'm back. But as we were talking about yesterday off air, when you go traveling and you're on planes and you're seeing loads of people, like, you're just more prone to getting a cold and the seasons are changing. So
yeah,
whereas not much can do. Maybe I just need to get more, say, echinacea, that people take all the time who say that they don't get colds as much. But
yeah, or just avoid people, Kenny. That's what I do.
I know. Well, it's a tough gig when you do these live events. But
that's not really true. I went to a beer festival in Wigan on Friday and I was around people on Saturday. That's probably where I caught it.
Yeah, I think you just answered your own question there of how you got COVID.
Exactly.
But no, it's, the good thing is, you felt bad for a couple of days, but, now you're on the way back.
Exactly. So I'm making good. A comeback. I'm making a comeback, Kenny.
So many things for us to talk about. One person who will not be making a comeback is Sting, but he had a big send-off at Revolution on Saturday. He had his sons involved, dressing up as old Stings, and he won. Him and Darby won. He went out on top, and people seemed pretty happy about it. He got a big, happy ending on this one, rather than being... I mean, did you think, kind of going into it, that he should do the honours, or were you happy that he kind of got to go out on a high?
Well, as I wrote in the latest issue of Inside the Ropes magazine, had the Young Bucks beaten Sting and Darby Allin at Revolution from Greensboro, it would have probably killed the show. No, it was the right outcome for Sting and Darby Allin to retain the World Tag Team title. And it means we're now going to have another tournament. Brilliant. I mean, just what we need, another tournament.
Yeah.
It was a shame that the year went long and Sting was doing his post-match speech and then it just cut off. And it just, wow, So I think they posted his full entirety of his speech on YouTube, didn't they?
He did, So at least people got to see it. I mean, it'll be interesting to me, and this is just kind of a general thing that we can kind of circle back on in a month or two. AEW, they've obviously had the big Sting retirement, which they did.
Yes.
And I think that pay-per-view will do really well for them because, I think that I've said this before, I think that Sting is probably the triumph of Tony Khan's booking because he's just been presented so well. But going forward, obviously last night, Okada debuted on Dynamite.
Yeah.
He's with the Bucks, which I actually think is an interesting move because, I don't know how much English Okada speaks. So I think having him in something that he can maybe not have, while he can still learn more about it, more English or how to do it better, I think that's interesting. But, we've got him who's just debuted. We've got Mercedes Moné next Wednesday, we assume.
Yeah.
So, and Ospreay's in now. So, in a month or two, it'll be interesting to see, does the attendance go up a little bit? Do the ratings go up a tiny bit? Do we see something in the metrics that say these big names coming in are making a difference? Because we did see that when Danielson and Punk came in, it made a difference.
Yeah, but
So,
they were big US stars, weren't they? And
yeah.
they were charismatic and really good at promos and had that huge, presence and recognition from their years in WWE. So it's different, really. I mean, Okada, I mean, I just don't see him being a needle mover. I just don't see it. I mean, Ospreay, maybe. I don't know. I
I
don't know.
mean, Mercedes does have, the WWE stuff, and I mean, I have noticed it's like there's a set amount of people in wrestling. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but like whenever we post like mag stuff, right? If we do covers or we do stories,
Yeah.
Sasha Banks or Mercedes Moné, she has a lot of fans. There's a lot of fan accounts of her. Same with Roman Reigns. People like that, like those kind of people have just like mad amounts of fan accounts and stuff. So she could
Yeah,
be.
I mean, yeah, Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, she's different because she's a product of the WWE system and a huge star as a result of being in the WWE system. Will Ospreay is best known for his stuff in the UK. Obviously, he's done matches previously for AEW and for TNA and other companies in the States, but he's best known really for his work in the UK and in New Japan. So, yeah, I mean, he's got some name value in America, but he's not CM Punk or a Daniel Bryan stroke Bryan Danielson. And Okada is further down the food chain in terms of, national mainstream fan recognition, who's going to make a big difference to ratings and attendance, what have you, in the States. I mean, it's a totally different kettle of fish, really. But yeah, I think Mercedes Moné has the best chance of making a difference out of those three for AEW. But I do wonder who she's going to work with. I mean, that Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo match at Revolution was a big flop. And, I'm sorry to say it, but Purrazzo has not done well in AEW. She has not done well at all. I had high hopes for her, and she has really, really been a flop so far.
It'll be interesting to see if she works better with somebody who's not Toni Storm, if it's a Toni Storm issue, or if it's just a case of she's not clicking yet. But yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
I've not been. It's weird because like Deonna Purrazzo has come from Impact to AEW, and it's been okay, but nothing. Naomi's come from Impact. I mean, maybe Impact just have the Midas touch with women. Maybe they don't, get a bit of everyone. But yeah, it'll
I
be
mean,
interesting.
part of the problem with Purrazzo is she's very heelish. It's a very heelish character, and she was behaving very heelishly in her feud with Storm, who's obviously also a heel. So she hasn't really rallied that much support following her first appearance in the angle with Mariah May, which was in New Jersey, which is where she's from, isn't it? She provoked a really healthy response there. But I mean, that match she had with Madison Rayne shortly before Revolution was an absolute disaster. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I mean, these two have been doing this a long time. And at one point, it looked like she almost broke Madison Rayne's neck. So I don't know what they're going to do with Deonna. I mean, she must be really questioning her future right now as well, having lost to Toni Storm at Revolution in a match that no one really cared about and really did not succeed on the night in the ring.
You know, she, I mean, she does need to take some responsibility for that.
Well, sure she does. I
You know,
agree.
she just needs to, because if you're in there with Toni Storm, who's a really over character and, you know, and funny, you need to bring it with her. You need to, and yeah, but it'll be interesting, well, you know, in a month or so, to circle back on the AEW metrics and see if anything has changed with these new people. But we've got
Yeah.
loads of other stuff to talk about today. Let's go on to SmackDown from last week. I know it was 6 days ago or 7 days ago if you're listening to this, but let's get into it. We had a mammoth, almost 40-minute opening segment with Roman Reigns first, then bringing out The Rock. The Rock basically, long story short, saying that he is not going to accept Cody's one-on-one challenge, but he will instead issue a two-on-two challenge. The tag match has been issued for WrestleMania night one, but the stipulation is if Cody's team wins, then there will be no bloodline allowed in the main event of night two. But if the bloodline win the tag match, it'll be bloodline rules, which means anything goes. He also called the crowd in Arizona meth heads and said they were the number one area for cocaine use. And then at the end, in a sort of real dramatic turn of events, Roman Reigns said, "You know, you need to acknowledge me." And The Rock took his glasses off and said, "Roman Reigns, my family, I acknowledge you as my tribal chief." And that was the segment. So, what did you think? I mean, some people are complaining it was too long for a sort of 40-minute opening segment. Other people are saying, you know, this was an all-time classic segment that set loads of stuff up. Where did you sit on that barometer?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit too long. Yeah, SmackDown match first, Glendale, Arizona. So yeah, Roman Reigns, Heyman, Solo, and Jimmy opened the show. Reigns was furious with the audience for not acknowledging him loudly enough. Reigns wanted to leave, but then Heyman said that they couldn't leave because he was coming out, he being The Rock. So, you know, again, this was quite interesting because Rock was presented as the biggest star of the bloodline, because he came out last and he would have his own entrance and his own mic time. And Rock then came out and Reigns didn't look happy about it. And then he said that, you know, nearby Phoenix was the number one city for cocaine and meth use. Anyway, that was pretty amusing. Obviously, it's not amusing that it's the number one city for cocaine and meth use, but I mean, Rock just turned this into a joke. Rock said that wrestling was cool again due to The Rock, Roman Reigns, and the Bloodline. Meanwhile, you know, as Rock's there, you know, doing his 1999 shtick and having a great time with it, the audience were as well. You know, let's be honest, everyone loves this character because it's like a pantomime character, isn't it? You know, we're all there to be made fun of, or he's there to make fun of the audience, and we're all in on the joke, aren't we, Kenny? That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah,
But I mean,
we're all in on it.
yeah, so Reigns didn't look happy at all, and then Rock said he wasn't going to go one-on-one with Cody Rhodes. This was, of course, in reference to Cody's challenge at Elimination Chamber to a match with The Rock anytime, any place. Yeah, Rock said, yeah, he wasn't going to go one-on-one, but he was willing to face Cody and Seth Rollins in a tag team match. That would be Rock and Reigns versus Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes in a tag team match on night one of WrestleMania. And as you said, you know, if Cody accepted, you know, and if Cody and Seth Rollins were to win that tag match, then the Bloodline would be banned from ringside in the Rhodes versus Reigns title match on night two. However, when, as Rock said, when Rock and Reigns won, then the Rhodes versus Reigns match would be held under Bloodline rules, which, as you said, was anything goes. So, I mean, that was a really good setup. I mean, Cody and Seth on Raw this past Monday refused to give their answer, nor should they have given their answer on Raw, because they're going to give their answer face to face to Rock and Reigns on SmackDown tomorrow. So again, they're spinning this storyline out nicely with, you know, little pieces of information. They're drip feeding the storyline, aren't they, Kenny? They're not rushing through this one. But yeah, the big moment was when Rock was about to do his big sign off and like Reigns stopped him. And there was this long stare down. long stare down like rocks, like, what are you doing, Roman Reigns? I'm the biggest star here. And Reigns said, I need you to acknowledge me. And there was, again, a very long pause there before Rock did so. So I was really cranking up the tension. And in the end, he acknowledged Reigns as his tribal chief. And then Rock allowed Reigns to finish his speech for him. So again, it was, this transfer of power from The Rock being number one to Reigns being number one in the bloodline. That was what was going on here. Reigns really needed to stamp his authority. And he needed to do that, Kenny, because he was obviously being overshadowed, wasn't he?
Yeah, it would have made no sense if he wasn't trying to, get the upper hand and be in charge. But I mean, I thought this whole segment was just right up my alley. I thought it was excellent. I thought there was so many Easter eggs that they dropped in of, Rock at one point talking about he's in the TKO board, which kind of gives you this vibe of he's in charge. So he can kind of mess with Cody if he wants to. And then, the Triple H stuff means that, he can play into it by coming in even in the odds at some point. The stuff with Roman Reigns and The Rock was really good. And I also thought that Rock just felt like when he came out, people were very pro Rock. They were cheering him. He was a big baby face to the crowd. And then he went down this whole meth and coke thing, which, it is funny if you just take it for what it is, which is a joke. And, I don't know if 4 or 5 years ago they would have allowed him to make these kind of comments on
Probably
TV.
not.
But it works because he's meant to be a heel at this point. So,
I'll see it.
have him absolutely slam the city. And, if he came to Glasgow, I mean, if he said that Glasgow was the biggest city for meth, he'd probably cheer. But, that says more about Glasgow than it does about anything else. But, yeah.
But I mean, it's a society with there's so much pearl clutching that goes on now as a society, and I think we've forgotten how to have fun in
Yeah.
many circles. And
Exactly.
it's like, yeah, as I said, we're all in on the joke here. Rock's there as this case playing a character, for God's sake. He had to point this out to someone on X the other right after he turned heel. Someone like knocked him and he just said, listen, I'm playing a character, I'm heel. How can you not understand this? And but that's where we are right now. But yeah, I would agree with you, Kenny. I thought the segment was outstanding, particularly the ending. With the stare down with Rock and Reigns, I thought that was the most tension I've seen in wrestling this year, and
Yeah.
it was just like wow, that was just like this here is just electric, and I'm so pleased that the WrestleMania road to WrestleMania and all the events and what's going to happen and what I think is going to happen at WrestleMania is going in the direction that I think it's going to. Because I think WrestleMania is going to be tremendous this year as a result. And what's more, I'm really looking forward to the post-WrestleMania season. And you will remember this, Kenny, because we talked about it many times back in, April, May of last year. Post-WrestleMania last year was a bit of a letdown. It's like, right, okay, well, what does everyone do now?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think this year looks really good. And I think the other thing that I feel like most people are in the same boat. I we obviously want the heels to win on night one. Because you
Yeah,
want the Bloodline rules.
course you do.
You want all the shenanigans and all the drama and all the bells and whistles. Because last year we had the one-on-one match with Cody and Roman. So you can kind of do something different. We don't need to do Rock and Cena where we get two of the same matches back to back.
No.
So yeah, I think this is really good, and I think that this is just so much better for everybody. I mean, if you're a Rock fan and you're somebody who really wanted Rock and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, you're going to get it next year, we assume, and it's going to be 10 times better because you've got a story that's layered that's happened, rather
Yeah.
than if he comes back and looks at Roman, points at a sign, and that's us going to WrestleMania. So I think this kind of is a win for everybody, whether you're a Cody fan, Rock fan. And I think it's like I always say that if you watch AEW, for example, and they do like a big long match or whatever, right? And somebody kind of goes, "Oh well, I'm a bit bored of that. It's just wrestling." Well, that's what AEW put out. That's their thing. They are all about doing in-ring wrestling more than the other stuff. Whereas with WWE, this is what they do best, is this story stuff that leads to the big matches. So
Yeah.
if you watch this and it's not for you, I just, this is WWE doing what they do at their best. So if this isn't for you, then they probably aren't for you. And that's fine. But, I think it's probably unfair to pin a company doing something that they're not known for doing as the barometer of what's good. So.
Well, I mean, it's working so well. I mean, on this sellout streak for TV tapings, there's huge interest in the product. WrestleMania, in terms of viewing figures or social media engagement and all the numbers they like to brag about and disseminate, it's going to be the biggest ever. It just is. So it's like, well, if it's not for you, well, okay, step off and watch something else because it's definitely for the majority.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And if you, the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, all these SmackDowns in March are just going to be so well attended because of Rock and because of the storyline. And I'm so happy that we talked about this 2 months ago. The Bloodline was, I expected Jeannie Williams to turn around at some point and go, your tea's getting stone cold. If that's what the Bloodline was getting, nothing. But now it's hot again, which is great. So
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, there was some really funny stuff there, like, just about Solo. Rock made a reference to Solo Sikoa, inside his dancing or whatever. I can't remember what he said. He's
he
like,
was
well,
trying to
that's
make him
Solo's.
crack. He was
That's
trying to make
Solo.
Solo crack.
Yeah, it was. This is Solo's happy face. So that was just hilarious. You can see that Jimmy's just so amused by all of it. He just finds it hilarious. He's just there in the back grinning. And he's got the best gig of all because it's just no pressure for him. Everyone else is doing the work. And but yeah, I'm assuming that Rock and Reigns will beat Cody and Rollins on night one, and so they should to stack the odds against the baby faces, so that when they triumph on night two, which I think they will, they look even more heroic.
Yes, I agree. Let's dive through the rest of SmackDown. We've got Tiffany Stratton beating Naomi in a match about 9 minutes. Apparently, this kind of had a little bit of time cut because of the opening segment. Stratton went over. What did you make of the match? And do you see Stratton doing something at WrestleMania? If so, what?
I mean, I don't know what she's going to do there. I think she's probably going to challenge, I would say Bayley, probably be Bayley's first challenger after WrestleMania if Bayley wins, which I think she will. And if she doesn't beat Bayley, I think Stratton will win Money in the Bank in the summer. So she's in an excellent position right now. Stratton won this match fairly easily with the prettiest moonsault ever. I mean, I've written here in my notes, Naomi needs to join the Bloodline now more than ever. That was my takeaway from this match. And Naomi almost already kind of looks, I wouldn't say like a spent force, but she's lost a lot of momentum from night one at Royal Rumble. I thought she had a good night at the Rumble. She hasn't really had any good nights since.
Yeah, it's not clicked yet, but hopefully, I mean, if yeah, she should definitely do the Bloodline thing if she can, and just give us some storyline wise. Because at the moment, if you're looking at WrestleMania, even as an example, Naomi's not getting on that card.
No,
So,
no, she's not. And this is her second loss to Stratton. Stratton eliminated her from Elimination Chamber, didn't she?
We also had Asuka and Kairi standing as Bayley and Dakota Kai in a non-title match, but it was all a ruse, of course, because Dakota Kai ended up jumping off the apron when Bayley went to tag her, and we got a sort of no contest, and then they beat up Bayley to finish the segment. I thought on paper what they did here was done well. I didn't think the attack was very good, if I'm honest.
No, I've written that down here. You know, they should have given her a worse beating. It was kind of light, wasn't it? It was not vicious enough.
No. I was just really like, give it some oomph, as you would say.
That's it, yeah. I mean, maybe they're leaving that in reserve. I don't know. I mean, I guess it does make sense because Asuka, you know, Kairi and Io, they need a spokeswoman, don't they? They need someone to do their talking for them. So it does make sense. And again, it's stacking the odds against Bayley, which, you know, is just basic, you know, storytelling, isn't it, really? Whether it's pro wrestling or the movies or, you know, superhero comics or whatever. You know, you always the hero always needs to be heroine always needs to be a disadvantage against the villains. So, yeah, I mean, it all made sense for sure. But, it felt to me like Bayley needed to really put the boot in more to Bayley than they did on the night. Maybe they're leaving something in reserve, Kenny.
Yeah, maybe. If you want a sign that WWE is hot right now, a street fight between Carlito, who barely moves, and Santos Escobar went over great with this crowd.
Oh, my God.
We got the big return of Rey Mysterio at the end. We had Legado del Fantasma. And we had Umberto, Angel, Joaquin Wilde, and Cruz del Toro all coming out and doing crazy spots. And we had Carlito in the end put Santos through the table after the return of Ray, who looked like Great Muta with his mask and his beard. So
it was a funny mask, wasn't it? It didn't really look like it was that easy for him to see through it.
No, but I mean, it's good for you. Got to imagine this is going to lead to a multi-man sort of team match at WrestleMania with these guys.
Yes, I would think so, yeah. I mean, Carlito at the end just half-heartedly blasted Escobar through a table for the pin after everyone else had done all the hard work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I get that Carlito needed to win here because Rey's return had to be triumphant. He was either going to return and then his guy was going to, you know, the guy who was there to help was going to lose. So, of course, Escobar needed to do the job here. But Carlito, everything's just so half-hearted. I just don't understand it. I mean, I just don't understand it at all. I mean, this was a big, big match for him. He was going over. There was all the bells and whistles. There was all the run-ins. There was, like, gimmicks galore. He was, you know, okay, he wasn't the center of attention entirely because Ray was, but this was still a big match for Carlito, and he still looked kind of indifferent, didn't he? He was just moving in slow motion at the beginning. I mean, maybe this is all he's capable of now. And if so, then maybe it's time to just send Carlito on his merry way.
Poor Carlito. But yeah, I mean, it's weird because I didn't think that he was that immobile when he came back. I don't really know what happened.
I just get the impression he can't be asked. I think it's just that simple.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's not got it in him.
I mean, some people in wrestling, Carlito was always a strange one to me. I could never quite understand him. And I know he was outspoken, and he was pushed around, and the family were pushed around. I get that he was upset about that, and that was why he left. But then he returned. He didn't have to return. It's like, if you're going to come back with the right attitude. Otherwise, don't come back at all.
Yep. Well, let's move on to the main events. We had Randy Orton defeating Austin Theory in the end, which is actually a very fun match. Theory was bumping great for Orton, and the RKO at the end was really good. And then afterwards, Kevin Owens, who was on commentary, came in and helped Orton even the odds when the heels were trying to beat him up. And we ended the show with Orton and Owens fist bumping each other. Logan Paul's back next week. I mean, are we heading to a triple threat? Is that kind of what you got from this?
I mean, possibly. I don't know. It felt to me like at Elimination Chamber it was going to be Orton versus Logan Paul one-on-one. But, I mean, I guess Owens could be involved. He could be involved, I guess. But I mean, this was a really good main event, TV main event, and the post-match bumps by Theory off Owens' stunner and Waller's bump off Orton's show closing RKO were so good they showed them in slow motion. They just looked amazing. And this was a tremendous TV main event. And Theory is so good. And I just hope that he gets another chance at Stardom because he was doing so well 2 years ago. I know he was like one of Vince's pet projects. And he's obviously even better now than he was then. And I just hope he gets a shot, at doing something big, either at WrestleMania or after Mania, because I think he's such a talent. I'm not sure about Waller. I'm not sure what destination he's going to take. Is he on the verge of a face turn? And if so, if he's turning face on Theory, like he obviously did, temporarily at Elimination Chamber. I think probably Theory's going to win their feud if they have one, which doesn't bode well for Waller, does it?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, they could have been setting something up with Waller not helping Theory when he was getting attacked by Cody and Seth at Elimination Chamber. So, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if Owens is not in a match with Orton and Logan Paul, I don't know what he will do at WrestleMania. So that's a good question, Kenny. Maybe it will be a triple threat with Orton versus Paul versus Owens for the US title.
Yeah, definitely felt like, they had Owens involved here, which made me think, well, he's going to be involved in some way of in
Yeah.
something. So we'll see. Let's move on to Raw. Lots going on in there as well. We opened the show with Cody Rhodes coming out and cutting a promo of it's quite tough because Cody's got to come out here and he's got to say a bunch of stuff, but he can't answer the challenge that was put on him on Friday. So I
Yeah.
thought he did a pretty good job of working around it. And sort of making fun of the Rocks. And I've not seen this video, but I know that Rock put a video on Instagram, like a 16-minute one, then he put up a 21-minute one. He put up a long video. I didn't see it, but I've heard that it's really good. So I should probably try and watch it at some point. But
Yeah,
Cody
I haven't said it either. I mean, it was quite funny. Cody said, "Don't ever talk about my dog."
then. Yeah, talking about Pharaoh's one step too far. But yeah. Cody has a pretty good speech, and then he brings out Seth Rollins, who comes out, and then Rollins at one point calls Rock Diarrhea Dwayne, which, conspiracy theorists could say, is Vince still involved? Because that line, my God, was just so naff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, was it as bad as Suckering Succotash? It's in the same hemisphere.
Yeah.
It just didn't make Rollins look very cool.
No, it didn't. It didn't do
As
no.
he then went on to say that wrestling is cool again.
Yeah, and then he didn't he say that Rock hasn't been cool for 20 years?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a bit odd as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know who rubber stamped that dialogue, those lines. But I
Yeah.
mean, hopefully there'll be a post-mortem or has already been, post-mortem on that one and the recognition that those lines, even with this crowd, with the audience being as hot as they are, didn't really go down that well. So you would think that Rollins is smart enough to know that he needs to come back with something better next week, or at least this Friday on SmackDown. Needs some better responses to Rock. Rock and Reigns are gonna be their stuff's gonna be scripted perfectly, isn't it? It's
Yeah.
gonna be rewritten and rewritten until it's absolutely as good as it can be. So Rollins and Rhodes as the babyface, they either need to come up with their own responses or have someone working with them, to have something that's as good.
Yeah. It was. I mean, the Cody stuff. Cody's just a star. He's and Rollins is too. But I mean, he just. This was a bit of a misstep for Rollins, but luckily I don't think it'll really affect Cody. And you can bounce back from one weak line.
Course you can. It's not going to make any difference at all because the match is big enough, the story's strong enough. I mean, WrestleMania, it's going to work because, I mean, it's just going to. I mean, you can already picture, can't you? I mean, Rock's the crowd working with Rock and Reigns. They could probably do nothing for 5 minutes and the crowd would be going mad, going wild,
They probably
just
will.
for the just for the crowd working techniques for
Yeah.
5 or 6 minutes. So yeah, it's not going to affect anything. You know, Rollins will be able to come back from this, but it needs to be a strong verbal performance tomorrow night on SmackDown from the faces.
Well, let's move on. We had Gunther beating Dominic Mysterio in a match, which was pretty fun, actually. But I mean, the strangest part of this was during the match that Michael Cole shouted out Sting.
Yeah, he said, after nearly 40 years, the great Sting has retired from professional wrestling. Thanks for the memories. Congratulations to Sting, said Cole. And then Pat McAfee chimed in with, absolutely epic match last night. And then Cole immediately cut him off.
Yeah. I did love the idea that, like, you know, Pat was one moment away from going, did you see the Bucks and Darby? They were really good too. Like, it would have killed me if he'd done that. But
and he could have said, well, what about that glass spot? You know, and with, that woman in the crowd was all right. It was hit with flying glass. Should have done a risk assessment there.
I know.
But I thought this Gunther versus Dominic Mysterio match was probably the perfect opening match. Actually, for what it was and for the where Gunther is on the in the pecking order and where Dom is in the pecking order, this was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen in all my years watching pro wrestling. It was so well done in every way. It was just about, it was, I think this was pretty much the perfect match.
Well, there you go. High praise from Mr. Martin. Yeah, no, it was really good. And Gunther won here, obviously. There was no,
yeah.
You know, there was no doubt in that one. But we'll come back to Gunther because there's more about Gunther on this show with kind of the questions for his WrestleMania match. But I did want to go into, later on the show, we had Rhea Ripley kind of say to Dom, I mean, she wasn't happy. You know, he's sitting on the trainer's table and Ripley's kind of, you know, not pleased that he didn't win. And then Damian Priest tells JD McDonagh he was going to have to make things right with Gunther. But then Andrade comes in and tells Dom, you know, I'll see you soon. Wishes him good luck. So, you know, they're kind of, that's an interesting thing to bring Andrade into the fold a little bit and see if he's kind of going to stick up for Dom. If maybe part of the story is going to be that Dom doesn't pull his weight in the Judgment Day.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the story. But the big rematch, Becky Lynch and Nia Jax, took place on this show. I think, unfortunately, I mean, Liv Morgan ended up jumping the barricade and causing the DQ finish for Nia to win. They didn't hit the heights of their January match, I don't think. But there was still.
No, I don't think they did either. No, definitely not. I thought it was still well done. I thought it was still a decent match, and it wasn't supposed to be as good as that because it was all about progressing a storyline, wasn't it? Rather than delivering a top flight match. That was the purpose of it.
Yeah, and it seems to be building this to Liv and Nia as well. So
yes.
And you know, it's about time. We've got two night WrestleManias now. It's about time that you can have a couple of women's matches that are not for titles. You know, and I would much rather see a Liv Morgan and a Nia Jax match or a Bianca Belair and Tiffany Stratton match or whatever it is than a four-team women's showcase thing. You know, they just don't interest me, to be honest.
Yeah, I absolutely agree because, I mean, they just, you know, okay, they get everyone on the card, but that's all they achieve, isn't it?
If they have to do it, I mean, do it on the pre-show. You know,
yeah.
Bring back a pre-show match, do a women's showcase night one, men's showcase night two. You know, and then it does get people on the card and come out and be in front of the crowd, but on the actual show, I just don't think we need it. So,
I agree.
So basically, we find out that next week there is going to be a match to determine who will face Gunther for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, and it's going to be Ricochet, Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, Bronson Reed, Shinsuke Nakamura, and JD McDonagh.
Yes.
It's got a gauntlet match. The winner is going to face Gunther at WrestleMania. We obviously had some kind of time put into Chad Gable and Sami Zayn in this show for their stories, so it seems to be a two-horse race between them.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, you know, Ricochet did also get a little bit of TV time, and he was wanting some attention from Adam Pearce, which is a fair point. I mean, they're doing nothing with him, and they've done nothing with him for so long that, you know, I'm bored of banging on about it, to be honest. I mean, Sami Zayn, you know, he's like, again, he's like, well, you know, this is it. I need this. And, you know, this is last chance saloon for me. You know, if I don't win this, I'm not going to be on the WrestleMania card. I mean, I'm not sure if he's going to win it or he's not going to win it. And in some ways, I don't think it should be Sami. I think it should be Chad Gable. So I think Chad Gable should win it. You know, Sami should be just moments away. It should be like something like Sami hits his finisher or whatever and then gets knocked out of the ring and then Chad scores a pin. And then Sammy's there watching from ringside and he's just there. He's like, oh, my God, I just can't believe it. You know, I've been, you know, we need to go along that road there where Sami feels like the system's against him because he's got to do this turn. You know, the turn is, to me, essential for Sami Zayn at this point because he's never going to reach those heights, you know, those babyface heights again that he reached last, you know, between February and April of last year. It's just not going to happen because he had all that amazing storyline support from being a firstly reluctant and then, you know, fully fledged member of the Bloodline, which then led to the split and everybody knows what happened last year. So he needs to go in a different direction with his career if he's ever going to regain any sort of momentum that's going to take him, you know, towards the top of the card again. And Chad, I think, has got, I think Chad, people are ready to cheer for Chad. And he's got that built-in story with Gunter making his daughter cry, which he brought up again. And they did have a hell of a match last year, didn't they, Kenny, on TV?
Yep.
So,
they not? They had two.
Sorry, Kenny.
So they had two big matches on TV last year, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right, yeah. Yeah, I was just so more thinking about the one when, you know, the family were there. That was, you know, the climactic one.
Yes.
And I always felt that that was not the end of their story and there would be a rematch. So I'm hoping Chad triumphs in the Gauntlet match and he faces Gunter and then beats him. Because I think it's time, I've said this before, there's nothing really more for Gunter to achieve as IC champion at this point. And I think he just needs to drop the belt and then, you know, move on to, you know, the top of the card, which everyone knows he's ready for.
I think he's a good odds for Money in the Bank this year, potentially, Gunther.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, let's face it, Gunther, Cody Rhodes, that's a two premium live event match feud, if not three. I mean, that's huge, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's got a big future ahead, obviously. Elsewhere, we had Drew McIntyre. He's been interviewed talking about Seth Rollins as a junkie who can't help himself. He latches on to things like CM Punk and Cody Rhodes and now The Rock. And sort of McIntyre says he's going to put him down because the title deserves better. But tonight he's focused on Jey Uso. And, you know, McIntyre, he sort of said, you know, I just wanted an apology. But, you know, Jey's going to have to pay for it. So that is the main event, Jey Uso and Drew McIntyre. Of course, Drew gets the win here. They got a lot of time. Of course, we had the Solo Sikoa, Cody. We had all the kind of interference that led to the finish. Jimmy Uso showing up on the broadcast table and then Jey being distracted, the Claymore kick causing Drew to get the win. I mean, we're in WrestleMania season, right? Like that. This main event kind of showed you they were setting up so much stuff. Cody and the Bloodline, Drew and Seth, Seth and the Bloodline, Jimmy and Jey. Like, it's everywhere. There's just so much stuff happening and it all makes sense, which is good.
Yeah, sure it does. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was, again, this match was more about the story, progressing the story than the match itself, which is what should be happening at this point, because at WrestleMania, it will be all about the matches and the TV's all about promoting the big matches at the big show. So, yeah, I mean, Jey's still really over. I mean, the fans just really love doing the chants and everything. And, you know, Jey survived, you know, Future Shock DDT after a Solo Sikoa distraction. Then Cody Rhodes ran out and he fought into the crowd with Solo. And Jey was about to win when Jimmy, of course, turned up at ringside and distracted Jey. And then Drew won with the Claymore. And at that point, you know, Seth Rollins showed that he's actually ready to go because he ran down that aisle, didn't he, really fast. There was nothing wrong with his knees, or it didn't appear that there was anything wrong with them. And he ran out to save Jey from a post-match attack by Jimmy. And then, of course, Drew McIntyre smashed Rollins with a claymore, and that was how the show ended. So, yeah, all sorts of plot lines, you know, intersecting here and, you know, just moving everything forward. I would just like to mention also, I thought Sami Zayn versus Ivar was a really good match. That actually was amazingly good, and fans were so into it.
You know, it's hot when one of the Viking Raiders is involved in hot matches. You know, that's yeah. they're doing something right. I mean, everything's kind of kicking the gas. I think that I forgot to add this on. I think that there's a chance the Gunther IC title match will be a triple threat with Zayn and Gable. I think that's a possibility because they're both getting so much time, and I just can't really see Sami not being involved on the show. But
yeah.
I think as long as it's either the three of them or Gable and Gunther will be in good shape. I do not want to see a six-man ladder match for the IC title.
No, I don't think. I just don't think they'll do that. I just can't see it. I mean, that's not Gunther's forte, and you know, again, that's kind of muscling in on Money in the Bank's territory, which is only a few months off. So
exactly. But yeah, and you're right about the main event stuff. You know, Seth obviously has basically showed that he is ready to go now. He teased at Elimination Chamber that he was days away when we saw him here, and you know, then we had the post match thing where Jimmy grabbed the chair, got in the ring. I mean, this is where Seth came out, obviously, and then in the end, McIntyre takes down Seth, and he's, you know, got the title belt in his face, and you know, they're building that up. My one hope is that the thing that we kind of both talked about in the podcast that is frustrating was the kind of lack of Jimmy Uso explanation when he joined the Bloodline. So I hope that with him and Jay, they get given some time to flesh out that story for WrestleMania. Above and beyond Jimmy costing them some matches, let's get some promo time. Let's get the story up and running, because I think Jimmy and Jay could be a big match if you put the time into it.
Yeah, I mean, it does need some storyline support, because it's obviously been overshadowed by, you know, Rock and Reigns versus Rhodes and Rollins, and then Reigns versus Rhodes. So I think we need like a, you know, sit down thing with Jay and Jimmy.
Yeah,
you know, like get security there or whatever. Just set it up so they can't attack each other with whatever, some stipulation. And we need like, yeah, proper sit down, almost like what they did with Ronda and Shayna, which was actually quite well done, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah. That,
Shame about the match at SummerSlam.
But yeah, all in all, a good Raw. Let's finish off by talking about the two Hall of Fame inductees for this year. So we have Bull Nakano going in. She's going to go in for obviously that run that she had in the 90s. And I mean, they've put in one or two questionable female Hall of Fame people, but I don't think Bill Nakano fits into that one. I'm happy to see her going in. What say you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what she did in WWF really was, you know, kind of nondescript versus what she had done in All Japan Women as their top champion there for years and their top heel. And she started with Dump Matsumoto as one of, you know, her girls. And then she went on to be the biggest star in the company and was still a, you know, huge deal in AJW when, you know, the women's wrestling boom occurred in like between 92 and 94 in Japan. You know, she could still go then. And, you know, she signed the deal with WWF in 94, it would have been, wouldn't it, 94?
Yeah, her first big match was at SummerSlam with Alundra Blaze.
Yeah, and then she won the belt at Big Egg Wrestling Universe, didn't she?
Yes.
At the big Tokyo Dome show, you know, which was one of
the... They did a couple of... I think she did, I'm looking here on her cage match, so she did... I think she did a match with Alundra Blaze on the Osaka house show in May, or two of them in Japan. And then obviously from that, I guess they were like, well, she's great. We should bring her in.
Yeah. Well, she was somebody who was very saleable to an American audience by then because she was massive. She looked like a villain. It was America versus Japan, which was still a thing back then. And, you know, it was very easy to promote, wasn't it? The old, you know, Beauty versus the Beast storyline. So, yeah, she was incredible talent, was Bull Nakano. I mean, to be honest with you, she was kind of past her prime when she arrived in WWF. And Lundra Blaze, Medusa was, you know, nowhere near as good as the talent that Bull faced on a nightly basis in AJW. So, I mean, yes, some of the matches with Alundra were okay, but not compared to our matches with like Toyota and Aja Kong and so many other people, you know, in that company. So, but yeah, she's absolutely deserving of Hall of Fame induction. She was absolutely tremendous talent. And just look up any of her matches from All Japan Women. You know, just there's so many to choose from. And so many, you know, I wouldn't say classics because it's not a word that I use, you know, lightly. It's not a word that I think it's a word that's used far too often. But so many superb matches, at least, that she was in. We did an interview with her, actually, in Power Slam. It wasn't a very good interview, sadly. So, you know, it really wasn't that good. But,
I was going to ask you, though, because I didn't realize before yesterday that she had a little run in WCW. In
yes, she did. Yes, that's right. She had some good matches there. And, yes, she did well there. But she was an amazing worker. She knew exactly what to do. She knew her character. She knew what her opponents needed from her. And she knew what to do against any opponent. And I think in the end, her knees just betrayed her. Her knees were so far gone because the style was so hard. And, you know, I think she lost all the weight. And then she did a comeback match in, I think it was about 2010 or 11.
Well, her last match back in the 90s was in WCW at Clash of the Champions with Vanna Medusa. And then she's only had two matches since. One was in October 2012.
Right, okay.
Anniversary of Kyoko Inui. Inui? She had a gauntlet match there. And then she also did like 30 seconds on a Manami Toyota 30th anniversary show in another gauntlet.
Sounds right. Yeah, I mean, I knew she'd retire, and yeah, she just came back. Just, you know, there was a reason why she came back, and it was only briefly. So we're kind of honouring her retirement, but just an amazing talent and richly deserving. So I just hope they don't have, you know, Medusa Alundra do her induction, because I don't think she's a very good public speaker. They probably will have her doing her induction, but I think someone else should do it. I don't know who that should be, to really convey, you know, how important she was to women's wrestling, not just in Japan, but worldwide. Like lots of, you know, female wrestlers who became female wrestlers in the late 90s and then the 2000s, they got those tapes. They watched her matches, and I'm sure lots of female wrestlers today watch them and I think, wow, she was something. She was doing that in 1990 or in 1988.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and that's when you watch that stuff from that period and you just think, blimey. And this was like 34 years ago. These people were tremendous talents.
I mean, even like, you know, we know Molly Spartan, the British wrestler who's in America. And sorry, I was messaging her the other day and she was saying that, like, a month ago, she had gear commissioned for herself that was based off of Bill Nakano.
Oh, right, okay.
So, like, even today, people still are affected by her and you know, want to kind of pay homage to her in some way. So,
oh, yeah, very influential with the face paint and everything. I think Matsumoto was the first person to actually use the face paint. I think that predated the Road Warriors. Could be wrong about that. But that is like contested, you know. So the Road Warriors were not the first team to use the face paint on a regular basis. But she was an amazing heel from the Crush Gals era in the mid-80s when, you know, All Japan Women was, in a sense, at its peak in terms of, like, you know, mainstream recognition and mainstream viewing figures. But in terms of actual in-ring work, to me, its best years were like 1990 to 1994.
Yeah. And then finally, it's going to be one of the headline inductees for sure because he was announced first, but Paul Heyman is going out to the Hall of Fame in Philadelphia. I know you were a big fan of this. You'd written on your Facebook. Talk about your thoughts of Heyman going in.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right time. It's the right location. Again, it's a no-brainer. Of course he should go in. I mean, of course he's, you know, he's a controversial figure, is Heyman. A lot of people don't like him for good reasons as well. I mean, a lot of things went on in ECW, which I'm sure he would say were regrettable, if not, you know, worse than that. And but I mean, he was, you know, a towering, you know, creative presence in the business and changed the industry in so many ways. Not some of those ways were actually not for the better, but a lot of them were. And I think if you go back and look at ECW from 94 to 96, which is, that was its creative peak to me, which was a shame that it hit its peak before it went on pay-per-view in 97. You know, it changed the industry, did ECW, and not just in the States, but in Japan and Puerto Rico and the UK and other countries as well. I mean, he was an amazing manager in his day, you know, in WCW and other companies. Obviously, he's done very well for himself since he returned to WWE in 2012, it would have been, and left WWE on really bad terms after December to Dismember. You know, in fact, actually, after ECW folded in 2001, he ended up in WWF. And I thought his commentary team with Jim Ross was one of the greatest ever that year. I thought they were just, as a phrase I've used, they were just, you know, sparks flew when those two were together. I mean, there was, I don't think Jim Ross was ever better, and I don't think he was ever better on commentary either. And Heyman did some really good work as a commentator in WCW back in like 89, working with various people there on TV. But I mean, after he lost the commentary gig following Survivor Series 2001, when Alliance lost in the storyline, he, you know, his managerial career was hit and miss, wasn't he? He did some good stuff with Brock, but I mean, some of the other stuff wasn't that great. Certainly,
he was put about a tough spot because he said he was given Cesaro because they wanted to keep the streak thing going, and but they had no plans for Cesaro, so he was kind of out there doing this whole speech, but nothing ever happened. And then, you know, Ryback, and I mean, it wasn't like he was giving anybody who there was going to be an actual chance.
Well, remember when he turned on Lesnar and went with Big Show?
Yes.
I mean, that was a tough gig. And then wasn't he put with Matt Morgan and Nathan Jones briefly?
Yes, he was. He was.
You know, he was given some difficult gigs there. I mean, how was he going to make that work? And, I mean, let's face it, also, he was on the booking creative team as well, WWF, when he returned in 2001. But that was checkered, and he ended up in OVW, and he fell out with people, and there were all sorts of problems there. I mean, although in saying that, you know, he did receive plaudits for his work in late 2002 on SmackDown, particularly when we had that three-way tag team feud with Edge and Ray, the Guerreros, and Benoit, and Angle, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he was given a lot of the credit for how good that was. So, I mean, there were obviously hits, but there was a lot of misses, and he got on the wrong side of Stephanie McMahon and other members of management, and then was removed from the creative team and sent down to, remember, OVW in 2005 after Jim Cornette was essentially fired. He ended up there working in developmental. That's how highly they thought of him then. And then they decided to bring, obviously, they did the first ECW reunion show in June of 2005, wasn't it? Which was a huge success.
Yeah, massive.
And that was kind of a, you know, a bit of a reprieve for him, or at least for a short time. But he was then back in OVW again. Then they brought him back to the main roster when they decided to do the ECW revival in 2006. But that unraveled in rapid fashion. And he, you could tell he was not happy almost from the start when it became a weekly TV show. And then December to Dismember in December of 2006 was probably not the worst wrestling pay-per-view ever, but probably on the top five worst wrestling pay-per-views ever. And he either quit or was fired afterwards. And, you know, he left on really bad terms. And, you know, it was, you're thinking, is he ever going to go back? And then he did when Lesnar returned in 2012. So, you know, kind of amazed. Yeah, I mean, obviously there was some dodgy stuff there with, she said, Ryback, and you know, the Cesaro thing was a big flop. But I mean, you look at what he's done in recent years with the Bloodline, with some of the best work of his career. He's been essential to the success of that, and Reigns and others have credited Heyman for their, you know, creative input on every level of that storyline, and their promos and match layouts. And I remember it was Jim Ross also gave Heyman a load of credit for the Goldberg versus Lesnar feud. They reckoned that it was Heyman who basically put that together, right?
Yep. He had a large part. I think he had a large part to do with Goldberg being there because he felt comfortable with Heyman, and you know most of Brock's stuff he's had such a big hand in.
Yeah.
So he's been involved in a lot, and then obviously he had that brief run in creative in 2020,
Oh,
2019,
yes.
2020,
Yeah.
where yeah, I mean in terms of non-wrestlers, he's probably one of the top of the list that deserves to go in. And I mean his speech is going to be good. It's going to be nice to hopefully hear him out of the tribal chief routine for a
Yes.
night.
Yes.
So, I mean, I read an interview that he did with the New York Post where he said that, you know, he's kind of resisted doing this for a while because he just doesn't want it to be like he's done. And I think that this will probably spur him on to keep doing things because any interactions I've ever had with him or any stuff I've ever watched of him or read about him, he's just not someone who likes to live in the past.
No.
And I remember when we were doing the tour with him in 2016, and one of the ideas that I had was, I said, you know, we could do a special part of the meet and greet where you wear the ECW baseball cap and the jacket over the suit. And he sort of came back to me, and he was very nice about it. He was like, I totally get it. He said, it's a really good idea. He said, but I'm really focused on moving forward in what I'm doing. And if I do that, I feel like it would be sort of admitting that they were my best days and what I'm doing now is not my best days,
Yeah.
which is fair enough, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I totally get it. You know, I mean, I absolutely understand that. And it's important to try and remain relevant, you know, and as you get older, you know, Heyman's a few years older than me. And it's something that's always not even at the back of your mind. It's something that's always ever present as a thought. Yes, I need to not get left behind. I don't want to be seen as the old man shouting at the clouds, or that I've lost touch, or I'm, you know, not enjoying it anymore, and I'm not bitter, you know what I mean? And but it is ironic, really, with Heyman, because ECW was so influential and has kind of become actually bigger, much bigger after it folded than it was when it was around, which often happens, actually. You know, that happened with a lot of music scenes as well. You know, like, I mean, I'm old enough to remember, you know, 76, 77, 78, the height of punk. I was only a kid at the time, but it was nowhere near as big as people in later years said it was. And like you'd think, you know, in later years, the amount of TV specials that have been done on it and documentaries, you'd think it was like the biggest thing ever. And it's like, well, it really wasn't. And you know, there's all this romantic view that it was enormous, but people have got this amazing sort of memories and love revisiting it because it was this rebellious form of music, even though it'd been around since the 60s with Iggy and the Stooges and MC, you know, MC5 and other bands. And it's the same with ECW. It was really, you know, a minor league niche promotion, but lots of other companies do, well, WCW and WWF mainly, but other companies in Japan ripped it off. And that was why it ended up being, you know, so influential and so, and seeming to be much bigger than it actually was. It was its influence on others that made it the company that it was. Obviously, it never made money, and you know, there was just constant problems. And there weren't even that, it didn't even that really, if you go back and look at ECW, there weren't even really that many good matches. It just wasn't that many good matches in ECW. But the whole way it was put together was like, wow, there's something really dynamic and interesting and exciting and rebellious and new, and it's this maverick promotion. We don't know what they're going to do next. And that was its appeal. And also, sorry, Kenny, just finally, and also it was really just in contrast to what WWF and WCW were doing at the time, because they were still living in the late 80s, weren't they?
Yeah. He was, yeah, I mean, that, it was the culture and the kind of the vibe of ECW, which is what got them where they needed to be.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, if you ask them and you go and watch ECW stuff, you're like, I mean, well, by like 96, 97, when they didn't really have guys like Benoit and Guerrero anymore, when they'd left,
yeah,
it was mostly hardcore stuff. And, you know, I mean, there was some good wrestling. Obviously, Jerry Lynn and RVD had some really good matches. There are some famous ones, but I mean, there's also a lot of dross. So,
oh my God, there's some really, really, really terrible matches.
It's like the Attitude Era, right? The Attitude Era has got some really good stuff, but it's got some terrible stuff.
Oh, but, yeah.
I mean, definitely. Heyman, as much as they're going in, very much looking forward. I'm going to be going. I'm going to SmackDown in Philadelphia, and I'd planned to just leave the show when that's finished, but I think I'll definitely stick around for Heyman's Hall of Fame speech because I think it'll be a pretty good one. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it as well. And I'm sure he's working on it already. And maybe they'll have a little bit more freedom as well this time. Now it's no longer the Vince show.
Yeah, Paul Heyman is the first Triple H appointed Hall of Fame inductee. So,
I mean, I'm hoping Bray Wyatt goes in as well this year. I think he will.
Have you heard the other rumor about who's going in?
Who?
Haku.
Haku, right, okay.
I think you saw that clip of him getting shown the Shockmaster thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I saw that. Yeah. He was just, he had like the giggles and he couldn't stop laughing. Yeah. Amazing that he hadn't seen it.
Yeah. Crazy. But,
I mean, how could you not have seen that clip?
Crazy times. But yeah, good for Paul Heyman. And I guess by next week, we'll probably know the next inductee because they've not got a lot of time. They need to start getting those names out there. So.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I believe Ivan Koloff still isn't in. He should go in. And, you know, Demolition, I don't think they're in yet.
No. I mean, I know they were part of... I know Axe was. I don't know if Smash was. I know Axe was part of that lawsuit a few years ago.
Yes. Well, it was all over the Demolition name, wasn't it? There was.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this was Vince era stuff. And it's like, you know, get these guys in now. Demolition were a huge act in the late 80s. You know, longest reigning tag champs back then. It's like, just sort this out. You don't know how long these guys are going to be around.
Yeah, and I think that the like with Ivan Koloff, I think he'll be in the legacy wing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Ivan's no longer with us, but richly deserving. He should have been years ago. He should have gone in when he was still with us.
Yeah, so I think we'll get them in the legacy wing. Because, I mean, Dr. Dusty Williams is in the legacy wing, and we've got a bunch of people, you know. I mean, when Pistol Pez Watley's in, you know, get... I mean, it's interesting, there wasn't a legacy wing for the last 2 years. So I wonder if they'll bring it back for this year. Hopefully they do.
Like, you know, I mean, when you got... I mean, Tori Wilson's in, right? Stacey Keebler's in.
Yep.
I mean, they're in and like, oh, we don't need to go over Hillbilly Jim again, do we, Kenny?
No, never again. I still couldn't track him down for you, Finn, for that interview.
Oh, damn. That's ruined my day, Kenny, if not my year.
I know. Well, anyway, listen, that's all the time we've got for today. We'll be back with an overrun early next week where we'll talk about the next issue of Power Slam. I think it's issue 12 that we're going into next. But yeah, hopefully you're glad to have us back. We've been a little bit longer today so that we can give you enough of us in case you missed us.
In case you missed us, and our voices held up, Kenny.
They did. It's going to go soon, so I'm just going to leave while we're going, still going. So thank you so much for all your support, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.